Dub Nation. What you're about to hear is not an interview. It's a conversation between friends.
So I thought we'd just talk a little hoops with a good friend of mine, Stephen Douglas Kerr.
KNBR presents The Steve Kerr Show with his former teammate, Tom Tolbert.
The stadium should get a free beer on Tom Tolbert night. It would be appropriate.
Along with Adam Copeland. It's Tolbert, Copes, and the head coach of your reigning champs, Steve Kerr, on The Sports Leader.
It really is the stupidest thing, but it makes me laugh, so we'll keep playing it just for that reason. The head coach of the Golden State Warriors, Stephen Douglas Kerr. What's going on, Steve?
Hey, Coach.
Hey, what's up, fellas? It makes me laugh.
A whole hell of a lot.
Bavakwa. It just, every time, makes me laugh.
It never fails. It really doesn't.
Never gets old.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you, at some point during your life, I'm sure you've played the drinking game quarters, correct?
Me? No, Tom. No.
Okay, obvious lie.
Okay, yeah, I played it a lot.
So I'll just continue on with my next question then.
Okay.
Because I was telling people one of the best ways to do it was off the nose, and people were like stunned that that was even a thing.
I didn't even know that was a way
to play. You
could
roll a quarter off your nose, bounce it, and drop it into a cup. I'm sure you've either tried it, done it, or seen people that have done it, correct?
I was a traditional guy.
You went with the thumb and the forefinger.
Yeah, flat edge, like bounce it up there. So I never did the nose roll. So, but I'm intrigued. We could go on.
Oh, it's money. You just roll. Yeah, you get it to roll right up the bridge of your nose, and it hits right on the edge. And if you get it in the same groove, yeah, you just bounce that sucker in over and over and over again. And yeah, it's, you know what it is, Steve. It's much like Rick Barry's underhand free throws. A lot of people don't want to do it because you look like a sissy.
Nailed it. Yes.
But it works.
Nailed it. Yes.
It's the aesthetics. What if you're like one of those old-time hockey guys who's had his nose broken like six times, and it seems like it would be tough to get a true bounce?
It's a rough terrain. Yeah,
know it'd be like going down the mountainside. Yeah. You know, you're going to hit a rock and hit an outcropping.
Yeah, you should go traditional style then?
I think you go traditional style at that point. You know, that'd be awesome because I happened to – I was going through Instagram a couple days ago because I wanted to see who was releasing new beers for Super Bowl week. So – and they'll give you like videos that are suggested for you. And I caught an old one of you showing shooting form. How you want to have your arm, you know, lined up, and you go straight up with the ball. And so I was like, and then I could tell by your hair that it the color of your hair that it was a few years ago. Either that or the beginning of this year.
Yeah, right,
it could have been possibly too.
It's like October, Steve, right?
And that'd be great if you let go. And for bonus content, here's the form you'd like to use in quarters. Take the quarter between your thumb and your forefinger, hit the edge, and you're just trying to get over the lip of the cup, right into the center of the cup.
I like it.
That would be an amazing two for one video is what you would get. All right, let's move on to the team this year. You know what they need to do. They know what they need to do. We've talked about it. They're just not talented enough to not execute in some of the silly mistakes that they've made, that especially in the fourth quarter, that cost you guys games. And it could even be earlier in the game. Sometimes a play is made early in the game that just switches momentum, and people don't think about it, but that's the play that kind of got things going in the wrong direction. Is it basically on them? Because I don't even know if there's anything you can say at this point. They know what they need to do. Is it like they just have to do it, don't they?
They do, but I am the coach, so I've got to help them do it. I mean, that's literally my job as it's defined, is to, you know, to help them figure that stuff out. I think what I'm trying to do is get our veterans to understand that because this team is built differently than the ones in the past, the responsibility to settle the game down actually lies on their shoulders and not other players. You know, if you think about it, in the past, you know, we had whether it was last year, guys like, you know, Otto Porter or you know, Belly or Damian Lee or you know, guys who would, the support players who were, you know, pretty basic, like stabilizing forces, or, you know, in the previous iteration of the Warriors, like where you had really high level players doing that, you know, Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston, where you had these guys who were super gifted, but very much, you know, point forwards, point guards, to settle mm-hmm. the team down. This team is constructed differently. So it's really more on Steph, Clay, Draymond, the, you know, the main guys who are playing and who have traditionally, you know, really been the core of our team. It's, you know, they've got to evolve and understand that the job falls on their shoulders, you know, not on the young players and not on role players. And that's a little different. And so I think that's the biggest change that we have to recognize and adapt to.
So I know for you, and you're right, that is your job. You don't want to abdicate the responsibility of trying to get them to do those sort of things. You've said about all you could say, I would imagine, over the years, because let's not forget, this team's been a little crazy for a while now. They just have been so good at times where it didn't matter as much. Now it matters more. Do you just keep trying to remind them, like even when maybe they don't need to be reminded? You're like, hey, just let's make sure we take care of the ball. You know, we're up. It's so hard because it's basketball, because the game's always going. Like that pass that Steph made in the fourth quarter against Minnesota. I mean, the game's going. They just missed a shot. It's not like you can yell at him, hey, be careful. And then he throws it away. Naz Reid, right? Naz Reid scores. And the next thing you know, you're calling timeout because it's a 3-point lead. And that was a massive play in that game. So is it just like, you know, reminding them timeouts, reminding them at practice, just like making sure that, you know, that's something that they're cognizant of. Like, look, we got to make sure we're not playing it safe, but taking care of the basketball and getting shots up, and we have a chance to really bury somebody. That's not a time to get loose. That's a time to really bury somebody.
Yeah. I mean, that's the message. You know, what makes it a little tricky is that I think our wildness over the years has actually been part of what makes us great. Mm-hmm. You know, because Steph and Clay are so lethal, you know, really before those two guys, you just didn't see players coming down and launching from 30 feet, you know, in the middle of the game. You just didn't, or early in the shot clock. Those were considered bad shots. And so I think one of the things that's made the Warriors and what's made our team for the last decade special is that we're, you know, frankly, a little wild, a little nuts. But, you know, because the league has adapted to us, and now you got everybody playing with pace and everybody shooting three-pointers, you know, we don't gain the same advantages as we did before. And we're obviously not as talented as we were. So the margin for error is a lot slimmer. So, you know, if those shots aren't going in, you know, can we settle the game down? Can we execute? Can we get stops? You know, those are all the things we've got to take care of if we're going to close out these games.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time.
Yep.
Excuse me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.
With Steph and Wiggins playing last night off of back-to-back in an overtime game, no less, and I think Draymond was slated to play until he was a little gimpy before the game, is that a shift in philosophy a little bit? Like, I know you guys have rested a lot of guys on back-to-backs, but these games are important, especially when you're playing teams that are right around you, which seemingly is everybody in the Western Conference. Seems like everyone's separated by two games. Like, hey, we're in fourth. Damn, we're in tenth. Hey, we're in fifth again.
Right.
This is great. It's really back and forth. But is that, would you anticipate that going forward kind of being the norm? Is like, hey, we need these games. And if you're feeling, you know, if you're feeling up to it, let's get out there. Right. And even if it's a back-to-back, let's play rather than, you know, play it safe.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's been, I don't think it was a philosophical shift last night as much as it was. Steph felt great, you know, and when he has sat earlier in the year on back-to-backs, it's generally been because he's been banged up, you know. In Clay's case, it's for sure to you know, protect against, you know, any knee issues because of the, you know, the injuries that he's been through. But for both Steph and Draymond, just because they're older now, and because they've got so much wear and tear, they're just more vulnerable to you know, nicks and bruises and aches and pains. And so Steph woke up after the Minnesota game and said he felt great. And our training staff looked at him and said, let's do it, you know. And the only thing we were trying to do was just keep his minutes, you know, limited so he wasn't up over, you know, 35. And I think he ended up at 33.
Yeah.
But you know, look, we got to try to win every single game, so we're gonna do that. But if our guys are banged up and it's counterproductive, then we can't play them.
Yeah.
And Steve Kerr on the UMA guest line. In terms of sort of navigating that health near the end of the season, when you do have to have games, is it into a must play situation at times? Not like, will guys play? I know you're saying we got to protect our guys, but will you get to a spot where guys, if it's a crucial game, it's about not injuring further? Football, they talk about that a lot. Like, he's not going to get more hurt. It's about pain tolerance. You got to be careful. But if it's crucial, when do you start pushing that envelope?
Well, that's why we have a performance team to you know, figure all that stuff out. And so I don't sit here and try to figure anything out going forward. We're just thinking about tomorrow, and we'll see if Draymond can go tomorrow, you know, after his calf tightened up on him yesterday. You know, both Clay and Patrick Baldwin were sick yesterday, and hopefully they'll be better. So we're just taking it, you know, game by game, and I still feel like we can, you know, kind of get on a little run and string together some wins and get a little separation, but that streak has been elusive because we're not closing games. So that's the main focus right now, is how do we do a better job of closing?
What has been, when you look at the end of games and the games particularly that you've had trouble closing, I know you've mentioned execution has been a big factor in those, the lack of execution. Is there any one thing or a couple things that you look at and say, God, this, we keep doing it over and over and over again, and that's the main culprit, and that's not being able to close these games that feel like, because there have been some games that felt like you guys have had pretty good control of the game for, you know, three and a half quarters, and all of a sudden it just goes to hell and you guys end up losing by two or three points. Is there a common denominator there anywhere?
I think maybe the common denominator is offensive execution, just not getting into a set that's going to result in an open shot. And you know this, but we're dead last in the league in free throw attempts. So, you know, a lot of times you close the game by, you know, just getting to the foul line, and we're not good with that. We're also not a great offensive rebounding team, so we're too dependent on shot making to close games. And that's, you know, especially down the stretch of close games, defense ratchets up a notch, you know, where the refs are going to let a little bit more go. Those shots get tougher and tougher to make. So we've got to execute better, set better screens, get more open looks in order to knock down shots, because, you know, we're not going to suddenly turn into a high free throw team. I can tell you that.
Yeah. You know, I look at the seedings, and I said it's crazy in the West this year, and I think it's going to go all the way down to the end of the season. How important is seeding for you? Because I've always felt like you guys were good enough. Even if you didn't have home court, you could still beat everybody. This year is a little bit different. It would be nice to have home court, at least in the first round. Obviously, you'd love to stay out of the play-in game and get that sixth seed, but how important is that? Or is it more important just to, like, look – I'm in asking this question, I know the answer. Get a good streak going. Well, if you get a good streak going, you're going to get a good seed the way the West is right now. But how important is seeding this year?
That's a good question. I don't. It's not something that we're giving a whole lot of thought to right now, just because we're so bunched together with everybody. But I do agree with you in terms of, you know, we know that we can win on the road in the playoffs, and that's a, you know, that's a really comforting thought for our vets and the guys who've been through this. And so I think right now that the, you know, the goal is just move up the ladder, get out of the play-in slots, and try to move up as high as you can. But, you know, it really is crazy. You know, comparing you go from 4 to 13, and everybody's within 2 losses of each other. So it just swings nightly.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
How much do you get involved in this next week in terms of trade deadline stuff? I mean, you got to coach the team, so that preoccupies pretty much all of your time right about now. And I know you have complete trust in Bob. That's why you guys work so well together and what they've been able to do. How much of that, does it take up any of your time? Do you talk to him about certain things, like things you think you might need and that could further advance this season? How does the last week or so go for you?
Yeah, it just depends on what's happening and if there's anything happening. But Bob and I talk every single day, whether there's anything going on or not. So if something comes up, you know, he's gonna call me and let me know, you know, what's happening. He'll ask my thoughts on it. And you just go from there. But, you know, sometimes it's, it can be a big move. You know, a few years ago we made the Wiggins trade, and that was involved, you know, a bunch of our guys. That was a really emotional time. We traded like 4 or 5 guys, and, you know, several of them didn't want to go, and it was, you know, it was tough. And then other years, it's, you know, it's more about pulling guys aside and saying, hey, you know, your name is being thrown out there, and we recognize that, and, you know, I share with them whatever I can. You know, like I can say with honesty, hey, I don't think anything's going to happen, but this is the NBA, so you just don't know. But I think it's doubtful, and that's fair, you know, but you just try to be upfront and honest because guys appreciate that.
Talking to Steve Kerr, head coach of the Golden State Warriors. They get ready to take on the Mavericks this Saturday night over at Chase. No Luka. Surprising Saturday game on ABC where a star's missing. That never happens. So it'll be. And I know you keep saying, and I know you don't care. It's like, look, 72. We'll get the best players. The best players will play in the best games, and we'll just figure out. And I agree with you on this, by the way. You say the product will be better. Therefore, people will be willing to pay more for the product, you know, basically TV deals, stuff like that. And we can get the money, maybe not all of it back, but we could get, you know, get close to it back by having a really good product. And I think that makes perfect sense because right now you get 82 games. And really, out of those 82, how many are you going, boy, that's a big time matchup. I want to watch that. Like, I watched the Clippers-Bucks last night. I'm like, hey, everybody's playing. And what do you know? It was a really good game, really competitive game. And it was a fun game to watch. And if we had games like that that were on national TV all the time, then, yeah, I think your idea has merit that everyone's a little healthier, everybody's playing, everyone's willing to pay a little bit more for that type of product.
I mean, I think so. And I, whenever I bring that up, you know, I'm sure the league isn't thrilled that I do so because you're talking about a bunch of lost revenue. But, you know, my point is if the product's better, maybe you make up for the revenue in the long run. I know as a coach, if that meant 10 extra days of practice during the year, that would be huge because we just don't practice anymore. I mean, it's the way the schedule goes, it's, you know, game day off, game day off, game day off. In the old days when you and I played, you'd have several stretches during the year where you'd have like 4 games in 5 nights.
Yep.
Then you'd have 4 days before your next game and you'd take one day off. And then you'd have like three really good practices and you'd scrimmage and you'd work on stuff. And because the games are now spread out, to protect, you know, the player's health against the 4 and 5 nights type stuff, you lose all the practice time because you're just constantly in recovery mode. And that's another benefit to me. If you had a shorter season practice time, I think the quality of play would improve. But
yeah,
I don't know.
I agree with you. I agree with you. Hey, before we let you go, we're talking about LeBron getting ready to pass up Kareem and how incredible that is. And we're trying to come up with someone that may pass him at some point. And we said, nobody plays enough games anymore. They just say everybody's playing 60, 65 games. And LeBron played a lot of games when he was younger. So a lot of those records are just going to be unattainable. The pitching, innings pitched, wins, stuff like that. You're just not going to get to those records anymore. But I mean, his level of excellence, only rivaled by Tom Brady. Those guys have two of the longest primes I've ever seen in my life and maybe will ever see. But what do you think about when you think of him as a player, just being able to do it year in and year out, all the extra games that he's played because of the postseason? Mm-hmm. His body looks the same as it looked like 20 years ago. It really is amazing what that guy's been able to accomplish.
Yeah, I mean, I think you think of a couple of things. I mean, number one, how athletic and strong and powerful he has been since day one. You could just picture him as a tight end or wide receiver dominating the NFL. But how durable he's been, the guy's a machine. And then I think maybe my favorite thing about him breaking the scoring record is that he doesn't even really want to score. At least most of his career, he wanted to pass. You know, he was more of a point forward than a scoring guard. And I think in the second half of his career, his shooting picked up quite a bit. And he started making threes. But it's just pretty remarkable that a guy whose main focus was passing and getting his teammates involved is going to be the all-time leading scorer. It just shows how massive his talent is, how great he is.
No, he's incredible. And it's funny you mentioned that because we were talking about Jokic before you came on, Steve, and how it's incredible that his first, second, and maybe third thought is pass. Like, let me get everybody else involved. Let me get them shots. And then if I get singled up, then I'll just flip in a 9-footer and it'll hit nothing but the bottom and we'll be good. And I'll take 14 shots and be totally, totally happy with it. Now, so on Copes, that means so much to a team because not only are they all moving, they all know they're going to get shots, but everybody just feels like playing harder. You're like more engaged everything because your superstar is not only willing to share, he's more than willing to share. I mean, I just think that means so much for the chemistry of a team, the way he plays. He doesn't even want to do it by himself. It seems like he's happier when everybody else is involved, doesn't it?
That's right. And I think it's one of the biggest factors in basketball is who you play with. You know, it's like if you could just base your entire roster on just getting guys who people like playing with, you're just going to have a better team. You know, it's like you just get a group together who love the game, who love playing together, love sharing the ball. That's half the battle. And it's been one of the reasons we've had great teams here. I mean, we've had guys like that, like Sean Livingston, like Andre Iguodala. And you know, as incredible shooters, Steph and Clay are, they're both really fun to play with. You know, they may not, you know, be traditional passing players, but they're just such great competitors and great guys. Everybody loves playing with them. And that's, I think, a big secret to success in this game is just putting together as many guys like that as you can.
Oh, by the way, we got to run, but I know I'm going to hit you with this because I know you got a kick out of it. Copes and I were talking about records that won't be broken or have a hard time being broken. And we talked about Scott Skiles' 30 assist game in Denver, and I told him the one story I remember from that, and I know you remember it too. We weren't on the team, but we heard the stories. when Jerry Ice Reynolds kept dribbling the ball after Skiles kept passing it to him. Pass the, shoot the effing ball, Ice. Shoot the ball.
I forgot about that one.
Skiles was a beauty.
My favorite Skiles story was when the three of us were sitting in Atlantic City playing blackjack. Do you remember this?
Yes.
You and Skiles and I drove up there after a game in Philadelphia and we're playing blackjack. And for about, you know, half an hour, we're at this table by ourselves. Guy walks up and he goes, "Hey, you guys play for the Magic, right?" "Yeah." He goes, "Hey, you know, I was all state, you know, in Michigan. I had 27 scholarship offers. You know, I averaged 24 a game in high school. You know, I was really, you know, I was going places. And then, you know, I got injured and it just, you know, I had to retire. But, you know, I really had, you know," and he kept going on and on about all his accolades. And Skiles doesn't even look up from his cards. He just goes, "Yep, everybody's got a scrapbook." and the guy just got up and slowly walked away.
Oh, dude.
Howled with laughter.
Oh, Skiles was a beauty.
He was a beauty. We still use that phrase in our family, by the way. If anybody ever toots his own horn, one of the kids just automatically says, "Yep, everybody's got a scrapbook." It lives on.
That's good. That's beautiful.
Oh, that is beautiful. Oh, as always, fun catching up with you, Steve. Have a great weekend and best of luck against the Mavs tomorrow night.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks, Steve. Great stuff.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah. Search for The Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.